Hello, this is Bronson Fry with the Alaska Associated General Contractors Build Alaska podcast. I am privileged to be joined today with Mr. Randy Bowker with the Army Corps of Engineers. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well, and Bronson, I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for coming in and taking the time to chat with us. Really looking forward to getting to know a little more about you and a little bit more about the Army Corps of Engineers, what they do here in our state as it relates to construction. So we'll just jump right in. What's your background? Where are you from, and how did you get into this?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll tell you, it's a personal story, and that's the cool thing about these type conversations, because we all come from different walks of life, but then we find ourselves at a convergence here where we're kind of after the same end goal. But I'll go way back to late 68 when I was born, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Dad was in the Army, and I got a couple brothers, and we're both Vietnam R&R babies that when he was back in town, a new one was being born. But that first, about 8-9 years in North Carolina, closely associated with Fort Bragg, Dad was in and out. But, I'll never forget a day that he came home, and it was coming up on our next move. And he sat us all down in our little family room, and he said, "All right, it's Panama or Fort Wainwright." So this is 1977. And Jeff, Jim, and I just jumped up and down. We read enough about Alaska. We were little outdoorsmen. We wanted to go to Alaska. Didn't matter where in the state. Mom just hung her head, and she just said, "Which one has more shots?" So she didn't want to have to drag us through the immunization clinic. But we moved up to Alaska in 77.
Okay.
September. Third grade.
Wow.
And he retired from Fort Rich in 92 or 82, and I'll tell you, Bronson, through that stretch, I always was building stuff. We were building forts, my brothers and I, but we were always building stuff, and that kind of grew into bigger stuff, projects, restoring old vehicles, to the point that when I got into high school, it was becoming clearer and clearer. You know, I can remember folks asking me, "Randy, what are you going to do when you grow up?" And, you know, that almost becomes a trapping question.
It does.
But what are you going to do when you grow up? You know, everyone wants to know. You're going to be known by what you hold by title. And I've kind of bristled at that.
Mm-hmm.
Because life's more than just our workplace.
True.
But I was always asked, "Randy, what are you going to do?" Well, you know what? I loved building things. I loved working with my hands. And so I can remember my sophomore year in high school, it became very clear. I'm going to be a civil engineer.
Nice.
Very clear. Now, I know it doesn't happen at that point in life for all youngsters, but for me it did. So then it was, where am I going to go to school?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sitting out in Eagle River at that time, and I'm not a total homer, but I guess if I've been up here that long, I kind of am. And I heard a lot about UAF and had an older friend who had gone there. I thought, well, I'm going to go up to Fairbanks.
All right.
So I get up to Fairbanks, and it's not the weather, because I had lived there. But it was just the dorm situation I was in. Different events led me to, this is not the place for me. And I will tell you, Thanksgiving of that freshman year, I called Dad, because I had worked at Prudhoe for Con Am. I said, "Dad, I can make $1,000 a week going back up to the slope. I don't need this degree." And he just got real quiet on the other end of a payphone at the time.
Sure.
And he said, "Randy, you could do that."
Yeah.
He said, "But you could also finish this degree."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Why don't you stick it out through the end of the term, and then we'll help you transfer down." So I did. I transferred down to UAA.
Okay.
Graduated with my civil engineering degree from there, and was very involved. Involved in their ASCE chapter. Actually enjoyed a AGC scholarship
nice.
Way back then.
Wow, fantastic.
And interestingly enough, my daughter that just graduated from University of Idaho also enjoyed an AGC scholarship as she was making her way through school.
I love it.
So it's very, very, very neat. But I'll tell you, coming through that, I'm sitting in my junior year of college at an AGC luncheon, and we've got a guest speaker coming in. A guest speaker happens to be the engineering division chief from the Alaska District Corps of Engineers and one of their current interns.
Oh, interesting.
And so, Bronson, I mean, I'm the vice president of the student chapter. I was responsible to get the pizza that day, and I made sure it all got served out, and Claude Vining had his piece and his soda, and I'm sitting in the back of the room, still kind of, you know, busying myself with stuff. And I started to hear him talk about what the Corps of Engineer does. And I'll just tell you, the Corps of Engineers is 36,000 people.
Wow.
Worldwide.
Okay.
Of those 36,000, there's about 900 that are active duty.
Oh, interesting.
The Alaska District, one of 41 districts.
Okay.
408 people right now, 12 of them are green suiters, active duty.
Mm.
So in our organization, and we look at the Corps of Engineers and we think, oh, that's Army.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, I can assure you it is. I am a Department of Army civilian, and I swear the same oath as an officer does.
Interesting.
I'm not trained to carry a weapon, and I wouldn't do that. They are. And so in our district, our Alaska district, our current Colonel Damon De La Rosa is the district commander.
Okay.
I'm his senior civilian, so I'm the deputy district engineer.
Okay.
We also have a deputy commander.
Okay.
She just came on board, Major Virginia Brickner.
All right.
But as the senior civilian, the deputy to the commander, I wear a second hat, and that is the Programs and Project Management Division Chief.
All right.
So, goodness, I hear this brief, though, and it was like all of a sudden everything fell away. I wasn't making sure anyone's drinks were still filled or pizzas were on plate.
Sure.
I'm listening to this brief, and I said, this is what I'm going to do.
Very interesting.
So afterwards, I got their information, and then I started what felt like an eternity of an application submission, an interview, and then waiting for a job offer. And I'll tell you, at that time, I did very well in college, worked hard, but did very well, came out with several offers.
Okay.
This was in 92. But I was very sensitive to, Randy, don't pass an opportunity.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm waiting for the Corps of Engineers offer. But I have these other offers. So here I am, a youngster, thinking, how am I talking to these principals of firms, saying, would you give me another week while I wait for this? And so I finally got to the point, again, this is with Dad's advice, said, Randy, just be completely honest with him. Tell them you are waiting to hear from the Army Corps of Engineers intern program. You're not leading them on, but this is your, no one likes to hear their second, but let them know this is your first choice. And I will tell you, Bronson, of the five other offers I had, four of them said, you know what, Randy, you wait, because if you can get that intern position, you do it for those 2 years, and either you stay there or you come to us that much better off.
Oh, yeah.
So I was, and interestingly enough, the two of those principals are still around. I know them.
Yes,
kind of neat. So I was hired in 92 into the Alaska District in
wow.
an intern program.
Wow.
I've bounced out of state a couple times now, down to Winchester, Virginia, in Transatlantic Division. Worked on an F-22 bed down over in Al-Udeid Air Base. Made it out to our headquarters for an assignment in D.C. All of these kind of broadening assignments, but always bouncing back into Alaska. We've got a unique organization. And I sit many times out my office window. I'm able to see the perimeter fence of J-Bear.
Right.
And I tell folks, you need to understand the business of what we do in the Corps of Engineers, because it's really not that very different than firms, I say, outside the fence.
Mm.
We're project funded.
Mm-hmm.
We're not in the president's budget for A. Bowker. You get 410 people this year. Don't worry about performance. You get 410 people. Hire them. No, we've got to deliver on our program because we're project funded. We wouldn't have the next year's portfolio if we weren't delivering on the current. And
sure.
I say we, and that is a very big WE, because industry, both AEs on the product development and construction on the actual construction of the project, we have to deliver.
Sure.
So it's very much a teamship, a partnership and a team, and that's what drives me to this transparency, because I've got folks putting together business plans based on what? What's got to be, at least those who utilize the Corps of Engineers, it's got to be me giving them information, not waiting to read it in the paper. So we need to be successful, otherwise we attrit. And the last thing, I mean, you're a businessman, the last thing you want to do is go to the junior person on your staff and say, you know what, we're not gonna be able to afford you this next year.
Right.
Very sobering conversations. I've had those a few times, mm-hmm. and I've told myself, Lord, help me never have to have those again. It's mm-hmm. very, very, very sobering conversations. But the Alaska District, a bunch of Department of Army civilians doing what most organizations, kind of their organizations require in skill sets. So everything from, my goodness, we have attorneys,
mm-hmm.
we have public affairs, we've got resource managers, we've got contracting, engineering, construction, PM, we've got safety.
Sure.
We've got internal review. We've got all these various skills required within that, you know, 400-ish people right now to help it run.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's then higher headquarters that we lean on sometimes. But we try to, as much as possible, execute our program on our own.
Perfect. How did a job, an individual project, end up on your desk then? If the Army wants to build a building,
yeah.
how did it get to you?
It's a great question, and it's kind of different based on the different programs. So the really also exciting thing about the Alaska District is we have all of the course programs.
Oh,
so the Civil Works program, which would be your coastal work, you know, maybe you've been out of Homer or Seward,
sure.
or Whittier.
Yep.
Those harbors,
yeah.
protected by a breakwater, the big rock.
Yeah. I was born in the Homer, yeah.
So those are ours. We have developed those, and then we have maintenance responsibilities to keep harbors dredged.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so
very interesting.
The coastal work, you're hearing all about coastal erosion.
Mm-hmm.
That's in our Civil Works program. River erosion, that's in our Civil Works program.
Wow.
We've got an environmental program that's just amazing, huh. and it's going to be around for the next 40 years, and that's not just on installations. Hey, we run into PFAS soils up at Allison, what do we do with it? We've got some record materials, what are we going to do with it? Well, we're also out in rural Alaska in what we call our formerly used defense sites program. So we're out at old World War II sites, and we're cleaning them up.
Well, I'll be darned.
You know, it's $1 billion program, and we do about 35 to 40 a year.
Wow.
So this is a program that has legs for a very long time. And then you've got this whole, okay, Missile Defense wants to do something in Alaska. The Army, the Air Force wants to do something in Alaska. If it is what's called MILCON, military construction,
okay. mm-hmm.
it's kind of, by law, comes to the Corps of Engineers.
Okay.
So that's how those come, through the President's budget every year to the Corps of Engineers. And we get kind of, I would say that we've got visibility of these as much as a couple, 2-3 years out, but sometimes they move a little bit.
Sure.
They move a year or two. But then there's all the other work that happens on an installation. You can call it the SRM program, the O&M program. Now, Bronson, those aren't required to come to us.
Okay.
Those partner stakeholders have a choice. They can self-perform it. They can come to us. They can actually go to another core district.
Hmm.
But if we look at the relationship that we strive to have with the installations,
mm-hmm.
be it the Public Works Director or the Civil Engineering Squadron, with industry, and then us as an executor, we want to do all their work. It's not selfish. It's that we're that reliable and we're that predictable. Hey, you've done this for me on a MILCON project?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want you to do this SRM project for me, and I'm going to know your staff.
Sure, consistent.
And I'm going to know that contracting acquisition tool because I'm seeing it over here. So, and they can get me face-to-face pretty easy because
sure.
we're right here in state.
Yeah.
So that whole portfolio of projects that's sustainment, restoration, modernization, SRM, or O&M, operation maintenance, those programs, that's actually, all of this is about relationships, but those
sure.
programs, we strive very hard to get. It gives stability to our staff,
mm-hmm.
but it also, and I'll use this word, it's not trite, it's the trust relationship. It
yeah.
keeps that relationship with garrison and base commanders,
mm-hmm.
me and my commander. It's all tied together. And then when I come and talk to the AGC at, you know, spring and fall conferences and then steering committee meetings. When I'm telling them these are the projects we have coming, it's with better predictability because the installations are saying, yeah, Bowker, here's what we got 2 years out. We want you all involved in it because we know you're going to do it and do it well.
Right.
And understand that it is not me having a very good PM or a very good contracting officer or a very good project engineer out in construction. It is a team that very much includes industry that says, you know what, we also have a reputation. We got skin in this game. We're going to get in there and we're going to do well because, right, good begets good. Right. Just like bad begets bad.
Sure.
We really are judged on what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can reflect back on some pretty cool programs these last few years. Missile Defense Agency is very pleased with what the Alaska District does.
Good.
My goodness, we've had these are big numbers, $350 million worth of bed down for them at Clear,
mm-hmm.
$200+ million at Greeley. You know, workloads in the $650 million range. These are big numbers. But you know what? Those are built upon reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to be able to come in here for the next 2 years and keep referring back to those, but you know what? I won't. They're going to become distant memory, not memory, but they won't be part of my forward speech because it's, what are we doing right now?
Yeah.
What are we doing on that J-Bear runway expansion?
Right.
What are we doing on this new redundant comms facility at Greeley, the right now projects?
Nice.
Because honestly, yeah, I'll throw up graphics on the wall and they'll show what we did in 16, 17, 18, 19, but
right.
What are you doing for me now? So it's mm-hmm. it's everyone looking at that the same way. Contractors in industry that look at it and say, okay, I know I did good for the nation
sure.
through the Corps of Engineers for Alaska the last 3 years, but I need to do this one well so that next year I have predictable workload.
Yeah.
I will tell you, and I don't currently have an ulcer, but I suppose if I did, Bronson, it would be in that area of predictable workload.
Yeah.
And it's because I need my workforce,
mm-hmm.
I need industry to be able to see their portfolio of work, their business model, and be able to predictably have stability in their staff.
Yeah.
Because what's the thing that's going to grate you and your household? You not knowing you have a job next month,
yes.
unable to deal with a car repair or purchase or a house repair
yeah.
or purchase. Now, I can't handle folks' personal finances,
mm-hmm.
but I can, with everything in me, try to give them predictability in their job.
Sure.
So that's one of my biggest burdens that turns into, I'm going to be so transparent, folks are going to hate to hear my personal stories because they just kind of trickle out when I talk about our workload
mm-hmm.
because it is that personal.
Well, that's one of the biggest things in construction across the board as an industry is that consistency, and it's really, really cool to hear you say that.
Yeah.
I think we probably all share that attitude. Who do you deal with most? Would you say it's the federal government or state or municipal? Like, where does most of the funding come from? And in your role, who are you mostly interacting with as far as getting one of these projects up and rolling?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have a pretty disciplined strategic communication plan.
Okay.
That generally will look like communications between Colonel De La Rosa, myself, Dave Hobby, my regulatory chief,
mm-hmm.
and ENC chief, Mark DeRocky. It will be a combination of us talking to, now in the case of Dave, Hobby, a whole lot of interaction with the state.
Okay.
Permits.
Oh, sure. All right.
Regulatory permits. Colonel De La Rosa and I, when we're interacting on future work, that'll be with a garrison commander or a wing commander
mm-hmm.
At the installations, but very much so with our principal congressionals.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't want to overstate it, but we have a very fixed, okay, we're going to go to make a Capitol Hill visit in April.
Sure.
Didn't do it in the COVID year, but we met them locally.
Okay.
But then it's such a good relationship in Alaska is so small, and I don't know if they'll listen to this, but you know, we'll get phone calls and run over to the Peterson Tower, and just because it happens to be that one of the senators in town, and hey, we'd like an update on fill in the blank, Pebble, Missile Defense, something. And in those meetings, leading up to all this infrastructure bill, we absolutely were in all three offices saying, these are our projects that are shovel ready. These are quick wins, Bronson. Nice. If you can get money, so you kind of find us, I don't want to say it's inside scoop, but absolutely it's letting them know, hey, if this project makes it into the bill or the list, we'll have that money under contract within X period of time.
Nice.
And, you know, it's interesting. Again, we'll find that MilCon arena has to go through a presence budget, but we'll find the Civil Works arena have to find itself in a WERDA bill, resource development bill. But in this little window we're in right now of CARES Acts or infrastructure bills, we will see probably a couple Civil Works projects show up in that.
Wonderful.
It's a big deal for Alaska.
Heck yeah.
We'll see, and you know, we got the industry to execute this.
Yes.
And so we very much, I'm just thinking how I word this. I don't want to say tailor our specs, but we have requirements in our specifications for Arctic experience.
Oh,
well,
sure.
What that starts to do is it starts to say, okay, Joe Contractor from Arizona isn't going to be able to speak to Arctic experience.
Yeah.
It starts to sound like we're kind of homers when it comes to our contractors. And I'll tell you, to a degree I am, because they know this environment.
Yes.
And this environment is tough.
Sure.
So
you pour concrete on frozen ground.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Speaking of which, you know, you've touched a couple times on the collaboration and teamwork between the Army Corps of Engineers and industry. What does that look like from your perspective? What is that teamwork? How is it embodied in your day-to-day operation?
Yeah, and tell you, Bronson, that kind of ties back into what the steering committee has done over the last several years. And I'm going to try to remember when that started. Theo would know. Let's say 18.
Mm-hmm.
And what that audience has is largely industry, but then myself, my contractor in chief, the commander, and my ENC chief, we will be in there, and then you know, some of our support staff as well. But we'll be in there and take and throw out a comment like this, and I did this. All right, industry, I know that when you bid Corps of Engineers jobs, you put a plus up on it because we're onerous in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what, Bronson? I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have folks with the mindset that, you know what, Bowker or the commander is going to take a higher level risk, therefore, don't bid undue risk into the job. So what does that look like? Well, we've changed specifications based on what industry has said. Hey, Corps of Engineers, you are making me put extra contingency on this contract because of this portion of that spec.
Interesting, yeah.
And I've looked at that with Mark DeRocky, my ECNO chief, and we've said it comes right out of our spec. So that relationship, it goes back to the transparency.
Sure.
One, being willing to ask the question, but then two, taking action when it's been raised. So that we can, make that dollar better spent. Because guess what? Bowker's an Alaska resident. He's a taxpayer. I hate to see waste.
Yeah.
Hate to see it. I hate to see projects that are unduly burdened. Another way it's shown itself, when we started the missile defense program, everything on those installations is hemp shielded. High electromagnetic pulse. High altitude electromagnetic pulse.
Okay.
So this is when, right, bomb's going to set off and just kill everything electronic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, these facilities are all constructed against that.
Okay.
Alaska did not have a very big expertise in that area.
Interesting.
So we went to industry and said, hey, this is coming. This was back, I can remember it, I think it was in 15 or 16. Alden Graham and I came out of the Carpenters Union and said, this is coming. You need to start training industry on how to construct so that we can hire Alaskans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not have to farm it all out to someone out of the states, Alabama, wherever the latest firm is that did this.
Sure.
So that was a big deal. And it was us really looking a little bit over the horizon, seeing we had a whole bunch of this requirement coming. Industry, help yourself, but help us by getting smart on this.
Smart. Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah, so we look for those as much as we can. I'll tell you. SCIFs.
Okay.
Your information rooms in certain buildings that require real high security.
Okay.
Secure compartmental rooms.
Gotcha.
We don't build a lot of those in Alaska. In fact, I can't remember the last time we built one.
Hmm.
But we have one going into a contract now.
I see.
Well, I hate that we're going to go hire a firm out of fill-in-the-blank Fort Worth, Texas to come up here and have to do the SCIF room.
Okay.
So we have gone to electricians. Hey, there's particular requirements in this project. It's not even out on the street yet, but there's particular requirements. Here's what it looks like in spec.
Interesting.
Prepare for it.
Yeah.
So those type things, it's just, I'll come back to that transparency. If we don't give that kind of forward notice, we're caught flat-footed.
Right.
And as soon as we do, I mean, I got some crazy stories. As soon as we do have to bring up the contractor that's not worked this environment, you know what this turned into?
You regret it.
Here's a funny story. We're swinging steel plates onto the top of a mechanical electrical building up at Fort Greeley in December on the end of a 16-hour day. My commander takes a call from a lady in Tennessee whose husband is on that crew.
Oh, boy.
And she's just bawling him out. Why is my husband working long hours? Why is my husband doing this in certain conditions? Okay, I don't fault her for being concerned for her husband. I don't fault him for even grousing about it a little bit. But guess what? Last contractor wouldn't have done that.
Sure.
Last contractor knows what he's getting into. It's what we do, don't we? See, you and I know. We're laughing about it. But you get someone who doesn't do that, and all of a sudden your inefficiency is down on a project site.
Mm-hmm.
Safety concerns go up on a project site.
Yeah.
And you know what? I want everyone going home every day with 10 fingers and toes, whether you're a desk jockey like me or you're the guy gal doing the hardest thing on the site.
Right.
We all have an interest outside of work. I want everyone going to it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you mentioned that you were exposed to the AGC early in your career arc. Can you speak specifically to the relationship as you've experienced between the Army Corps of Engineers and the AGC, maybe how it's grown or developed over the time in your tenure where you're at now?
Yeah, I would definitely. So I, you know, my visibility in my current position obviously is better now that I'm in it. But I can remember previous deputy district engineers going to, like it used to always be at the Captain Cook, right? We'd always go over here for the fall AGC conference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I even remember coming over one time as a branch chief and seeing Larry McAllister giving a program brief. I'll just tell you, I always thought it was pretty stale. And it was just a drone. And if Larry ever listens to this, that's okay, because he and I are buddies. But I know when I started in 2013, the position I'm in, I wanted to make sure that there was actually real detail in what we have coming. Again, this transparency, and I've so spoken this down to my staff. I'm so glad to see they do this too. It's just the getting the detail out on the street or to industry so that we can be successful. Mm-hmm. I bristle a little bit when I'll go to a Corps of Engineers-wide type meeting of my peers, and and it's all about what I have done. Okay, well, there's times I need to take credit for stuff.
Sure.
There is. Might be in an interview. Who knows? Might be in some award nomination. I don't know. Fill in the blank. You know what? In the execution of our workload, it is not what Randy's done.
Mm-hmm.
I'll help set a condition. I'll help develop some relationships, but it's a lot bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the mindset of what I have brought to and have enjoyed seeing a steering committee start. I wasn't the brainchild for that, by the way, but I very much enjoy being a part of it.
Sure.
and that's in that partnership with AGC.
What kind of opportunities do you see out there, and for whom, and how would they be taken advantage of?
Yeah, I like that. So I mentioned earlier that I like mentoring. I also like STEM. I like talking to college kids. Sadly, I couldn't go face-to-face, but back in March, I talked to the ANSEP group through a Zoom meeting. Here's what I would say, and this kind of gripes me.
All right.
My attrition level.
All right.
And oftentimes, you get an organization judged on their attrition. Hmm. But we historically have a yearly attrition between 12 and a high of 19%.
All right.
So you think about an organization of 400, we're talking a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you might wonder, what the heck, do an analysis and find out how bad the leadership or the morale situation is that you attrit so bad. Well, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, we've got the whole retirement thing going. But then we also have military spouses. We got PCSs that happen, permanent change of stations that happen annually, things that drive an attrition level. So with that said, there's a lot of opportunity to hire every year.
All right.
And it is not in any one place. So we have folks come on board with no degree. We do not have positive education requirements in all of our positions. We have folks that will come into construction in like a quality assurance rep or a civil engineer tech type position that are not degreed. We have folks in resource management that are not degreed. Now, many are,
sure.
But some aren't. Contracting, we have assistants that are not degreed. Now, once they're wanting to be a contracting officer, they would be.
Mm-hmm.
So it really in all areas, in our engineering positions, those are degreed. PM, okay.
Right.
You want to raise your eyebrows?
Yeah.
My position does not require a degree.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's kind of this legacy craziness that hasn't been worked into the position description yet, but
okay.
That's weird. I don't know of any of my counterparts that aren't, but
sure.
So you have the, truly, folks who come in a non-degreed position. It's not all just through a summer hire or an intern type position. We hire folks call it even apprentice or and
sure.
in journeyman positions.
Mm-hmm.
We advertise our positions.
Okay.
But we also have opportunity to direct hire. So there's direct hire authorities. Those would be in many of our engineering construction PM positions. And those come through relationships, industry contacts.
Sure.
I know many folks who have come from industry into journeyman level positions in the Alaska district through direct hire authorities.
Yeah.
You know, on that old school intern type thought we may have, that's going to be in that 4, 5, 6 a year.
Okay.
So that would be like what I came in.
Sure.
College grad wants to start, and that's there. But what we'll see is we'll see positions advertised on USA Jobs. We see relationships with folks in the district, be it through a division chief like myself or a branch chief that know they have a vacancy coming or have one that was unexpected.
Sure.
And we'll go to industry because, you know, whatever. You know, Stan Wary, my engineer, environmental chief, happens to know someone from Jacobs who has done work for him forever and
might be a good
goes kid. Direct and says, hey, are you interested?
Right.
So
on.
Those type things will happen as well. But I guess I'll just come back to that attrition number. It's kind of crazy. You know, we're going to have 40, 60 people a year
right.
that we're going to hire. Some are within the Corps of Engineers movements,
mm-hmm.
but then others are right here out of Alaska. Now, and I'll tell you, it kind of touches that whole how much of a homer really am I. If I could, Bronson,
mm-hmm.
I'd hire an Alaska resident because they know what they're getting into.
Sure.
You don't know how many people. I can't even remember how many. They come up with a one-year commitment.
Yeah.
Day 366, they've got a note to their boss saying they're heading out.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's just not for everyone. Otherwise, our population would be booming, right?
Sure. That's true.
It's just not for everyone. And maybe it's not for everyone in that particular household.
Yeah.
We are geographically separated. That works for us in many cases, but it works against us in some cases.
Sure.
It just takes too much to get back to a relative in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Right. Understood.
So as much as we can, and you know, new folks bring goodness, new eyes, new looks, new thoughts on ways to do things. But you know, if I can hire out of industry or out of an Alaska university, they know what they're getting into, at least environment wise.
Yeah, no, that's really great info. You know, I was going to ask you how folks apply, but you mentioned USA Jobs. I'm assuming that's a website. Is that where you direct folks if they were simply just hearing this and thought, man, I should look into that more?
Absolutely, and they can screen down the sort to Alaska. They can screen it down further to Army.
Okay.
And they can screen it down further to Corps of Engineers, and it'll show them what is currently listed for Alaska.
All right, that's good. Now, this might be a silly question. Is there a Corps of Engineers for other branches of military, or is that just the Army?
Well, so no, it's a great question, and this puzzles me again. I'm going to go back to, as a taxpayer, why do we have different executing agents? So the Navy has what's called NAVFAC. Or actually, just rebranded slightly, their name changed, but Naval Facilities Command.
Okay.
They're very much like a Army Corps of Engineers. And they do everything Navy and Marines.
Okay, interesting.
So we have Marines down in Kodiak.
Okay.
And they put a barracks up here a few years ago, more than a few years ago, 10 years ago. And they executed that out of their Honolulu office versus us do it. Because it was a Navy project.
Interesting.
So the Navy has NAVFAC, civilians, and then Seabees, their active duty side.
Right.
The Air Force, a little less, but they have an executing arm. Now, I told you earlier that by law, the Corps of Engineers does Army and Air Force. But
right.
The Air Force does have a provision that they can self-execute. With approvals, they have to pursue it. They can self-execute a MILCON project.
Interesting.
And so that used to be AFSEC, then AFCAC, and now it's AFIMSC, Air Force Installation Management Command. And they have a capability, and they utilize it for generally smaller stuff on the installation, but they have executed some MILCON before as well.
Good to know.
But the Army's is the Army Corps of Engineers, and again, I've scratched my head before thinking, why do we have executing agents in multiple services? The world just happens to be divvied up that way.
Sure, no problem. Yeah. But just for the interest of guiding folks into a spot they want to be, if they really wanted to work in Alaska in this arena of the construction industry, USAjobs.com might be a good place to start, and they can search for different branches, each of these that you just described.
Yeah.
Maybe start. Sounds like starting with the Army Corps might be a good choice, but each his own.
You know, one more thing, they may get frustrated with going to a site and feeling like they're not seeing everything. I will tell you, even just a search engine for Alaska District Corps of Engineers, they will come to a public affairs number in there.
Okay.
They will see a workforce management number in there.
Okay.
And querying in to the district directly, I would advise that as well.
Good. Thank you. So kind of to put a bow on this thing, do you have any other advice, generally speaking, for someone who might be seeking a career with the Army Corps of Engineers? You've done an excellent job kind of describing the broad scope of individuals that you might be looking for. There certainly seems to be opportunities there. So what sort of advice would you give someone that's maybe much like yourself, intrigued by this idea when they first heard about it and wanted to pursue it a little bit more?
Yeah. So here's the thing. The Corps of Engineers is made up of all types of people. We've got prior service, we've got current active duty, we've got Department of Army civilians, just like myself, who have been a career civilian. Bronson, I could probably come be the president of your company and make more money than I do. But you know what? That's okay. I have chosen the route I've gone, and Monday is not hard for me because I love what we do.
Right.
I love the staff we work with. I love our mission and vision. It's not to diminish what you do. It's just what I have personally been called to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a great variety, which is a plus. It is a draw. I would say, I'd be naive not to say, there's a security.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I alluded to before, though, we've had to let folks go due to workload. But there's a security. That's a draw.
Yeah.
There's a service side of this that is a draw.
Yeah, I know.
The natural disasters, if there is a disaster that is declared national, mm-hmm. that FEMA then has a response to, mm-hmm. we respond under FEMA in both structural integrity, mm-hmm. be it an earthquake, hurricane, whatever, ice, power, blue roof missions, we fall in under FEMA to serve this country in the time of disaster. It's incredibly satisfying. I've been out three times on these earlier in my career, and I'll tell you what, to go to the Van Nuys earthquake way back in the day down in California and to walk down the street placarding houses, have folks in tents in their front yard coming up to me and grabbing my vest just wanting to tell me their story.
Yeah.
It's amazing to be able to just see the humanity side.
Help our country, help our community.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's great advice. I could not be more grateful for your time today. It's really nice to be able to get your perspective on this and just expose folks to maybe something they hadn't considered before. The construction industry, I'm always fascinated by how broad it is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always some sort of aspect that I hadn't quite thought about. And this has been a big one that I've been wanting to get more information on for a while.
Yeah.
I sincerely do appreciate your time. Is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
Well, all parts of our industry are important.
Mm-hmm.
There's folks that are going to choose to be a framer, an electrician, a plumber. They may be a desk jockey just like me.
Sure.
All parts fit into this whole. And it is a fuel for this state. So,
yes,
I very much enjoy what I do. And the relationships are key in that.
Yeah, agreed. Seems to be a consistent thread through each of the folks I talk to, no matter what their experience or background is. It's all about building relationships,
mm-hmm.
and especially in a place like Alaska. This is unique in that respect, for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you again for your time, sir. I really mm-hmm. do appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you, Bronson.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.